banheteira.
Mulher!
Acabo verde.
Hello and welcome to High and Low, a Curaçao podcast. I'm your host Spencer, and with me is some dude.
Hey. I don't know if you're interested, but I've got some educational films I'm looking to sell. I don't know if you're a businessman in town. Maybe you're gonna meet some clients. I'm sure they'd be interested in this. Just a couple of different things.
What kind of things?
You know, they're educational. They're about,
Are they medical?
Yeah. About people's bodies. You know, how important it is to keep a body healthy. Yeah. It's got lots of teachers and students in the movie.
I have 30,000 yen.
That sounds, that's actually exactly what it costs to produce this. I'm going to need at least 60, and then, you know...
No deal.
Oh, man. So, yeah, hey.
Yeah, this is a very special episode for September. And because of scheduling stuff, which instead of doing a World War II movie, which was kind of a downer, we're going to watch another movie that's kind of a downer called The Pornographers.
At least it's an extremely artful downer.
That's true. Yeah,
this is kind of a crazy movie.
I'm shocked that this was made at all.
Yeah.
Like, it feels modern.
Yeah, I mean, like, I kept thinking, like, David Lynch must have seen this and a bunch of other people. Because it feels, it's so complicated in its construction. Like, mm-hmm. it's got a whole meta-narrative. It jumps around with time. It has symbolism, blatant symbolism, and then just a little hint of what's going to be going on. It foreshadows, and it doesn't stop to explain itself. Like there's a through line plot, but the movie is so much more than its plot.
Yeah, I said it already, but I'm shocked that. This was deemed acceptable to release at the time.
Yeah.
But the director, this is from 1966, in case you're wondering. So the director is Shohei Imamura. He also directed Pigs and Battleships, which is another kind of similar movie in terms of, like, it's a very artful movie. It's complex and bizarre and has, like, well, that one, I'd say they're both funny, but Pigs and Battleships is actually much more of a comedy than this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this movie does have plenty of comedy bits in it, though. Like, I mean, I think the whole concept of a pornography maker and producer... Mm-hmm. It can be, I mean, that can be easily mined for comedic moments. But this, oh man, like outside of his life there, his whole story is just the main character, Mr. Ogata there. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of crap going on.
Yep. Let's see, the screenplay is also by Imamura and Koji Numata. It's based off of a novel by Akiyuki Nosaka, and the music, which I'm not saying it's like, well, there's not really much of a score, like in the way you like think of a score, but like the music cues and stuff are very bizarre and interesting.
Yeah.
It's by Toshiro Kusunoki. Let's see. And, the cast has a couple people who've shown up and stuff. Let's see.
They weren't all put to death after this movie?
Let's see. So the lead of the movie, Ogata, is played by Shoichi Ozawa. He was also in Pigs and Battleships. I don't remember where. The character Haru is played by Sumiko Sakamoto. The daughter is played by Keiko is played by actress Keiko Kagawa. The son is played by Koichi is played by Masami Koda. He is in The Great Yokai War, and he's in a Kinoshita movie, My Son, My Son.
Masaomi Kondo, rather?
Yeah.
Masaomi.
And there's a perverted old man in it, played by Gunjiro Nakamura. He's been in, he was the pervy old man in End of Summer, and he's the pervy old man in The Lower Depths. He has a type.
I guess so.
Did you recognize him?
I mean, there was a pervy old man in this movie. I didn't notice.
there's a detective character. Nothing at all with him. But the father of Ogata is played by Ishiro Sugai, and he was in Sanshiro Sugata Part 1.
Yeah.
I don't remember him.
No, he was the monk guy, wasn't he?
I gotta look it up again.
I mean, he was playing a monk in this. I mean, he supposedly.
Yeah. He's also in Early Summer, the Ozu film, and he's also in the Mizoguchi movie, Sanshu the Bailiff. Yeah, Sanshu the Bailiff is really great. We should cover it, although it's really sad. What's Mizoguchi? Of course it's sad.
Oh, I think we have to cover it, right? That's like a rule.
Yeah, we gotta cover Mizoguchi at some point. Let's see. And this was reviewed by New York Times May 22nd, 1987. So I was -4 and you were 6 or whatever.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. And it's a positive review. It's not really, there's nothing really that notable in it.
It's interesting that it would get a positive review. It seems like a director, or it seems like reviewers at the time were able to recognize something that was at least different film-wise. Maybe that's why they were so hard on Kurosawa stuff. It's like, you know, that stuff is, you know, very well made, mm-hmm. But it is also a very linear style movies.
Yeah.
And then something like this or Pigs and Battleships, it's like, what's going on?
Yeah, Kurosawa also a little too Hollywood for him.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, at the time. Now it's different. But yeah.
I'm tired of that Hollywood Kurosawa.
The review is by Janet Moslin. She's a famous film reviewer.
Uh-huh.
I recognize the name, but I'm not sure from where.
And what did she give Revenge of the Nerds? I'm just kidding. I don't care.
Let's see. Yeah. That's it for that section.
Sure. So how much pornography was in this movie?
Not much.
I'm thinking it's probably 0.1.
I mean, you see the filming of a couple scenes.
Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, the startup, the filming, and at some point there is an orgy, but you're not really seeing anything. Except for that weird style of Japanese kissing in these movies where people just kind of press their faces against each other and, like, wiggle the head around.
Yeah, it's, well, that's not even being filmed.
Yeah. I saw a Japanese movie where a person was doing that, and I tried it on a girl, and then she broke up with me. So, I'm just saying. No, I don't. Not really. Sarah? Yeah, Sarah broke up with me after I tried to revolve my face on her lips.
Yeah, so, This is a pretty complex movie. Let's just get into it.
What happened in this movie? I'm not sure. I had to watch it twice.
Oh, really?
Well, just the beginning part, because I was so confused. It took a long time to watch this movie. Like, I paced it out over the week, because I'd feel like I got, like, an hour in, and then I'd look at it, and it's like, no, it's been 20 minutes, because there was just so much content. And, like, I was expecting, honestly, I was expecting a straightforward narrative. And that is my mistake. Because we've done other Nakatsu movies, right?
Yeah, it's a Nakatsu film.
And we're not, it doesn't seem like there's a standard other than the ones that I feel like we've watched either have something to do with some sort of a violent situation or a sexy situation. Or both. Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, the thing that Pigs and Battleships have in common with this one is that somebody gets an abortion at some point.
Man, that happens.
I mean, that's just like, I'm still utterly surprised at how often it comes up in these movies we watch. How many times, like, this is like the fourth or fifth movie we've seen where somebody just is like, oh yeah, there was an abortion.
Yeah, something like that. And yeah. Still, in Hollywood movies at this time, I don't think you could even say that.
Oh, hell no. Yeah, if somebody wasn't going to have a baby, it's because they lost it tragically, you know? It's a very sad situation. And this is just like, I mean, when it gets mentioned in this movie, it's the after fact, and the woman who had it is telling the person that was responsible for the child, and he's kind of casually upset about it, but only because he wants to have a baby, yeah. Not because she did anything wrong. So you want me to tell a story for this movie, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a guy named Mr. Ogata.
Well, what?
Mr. Ogata.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we didn't get to the framing device yet.
No. I'm telling the story.
Okay.
There's a guy named Mr. Ogata, and he lives upstairs of, like, a barber shop. He's married to a woman.
It's a beauty salon?
Whatever. She keeps saying that somebody needs to get their barber's license. I assumed it was a barber shop.
Maybe Japan barber is used for both.
Yeah. I don't know. And he's married to a woman who is a widow. Mm-hmm. And she has two grown kids. One of them is in his late teens, if not into his 20s. The other, it's a guy, what is the boy's name?
Koichi.
And she has a younger daughter who's 15.
Yeah.
And her name is?
Keiko.
And the man is a pornography maker.
Has his own indie studio.
But since that is against the law, he is telling everyone that he sells medical supplies. Mm-hmm. Him and his partners are trying to keep their stuff away from the local mob who want to get a cut of it. Although there's only two occasions where that actually comes into play.
Yeah, just two.
Eventually, Mr. Ogata there starts smooching on the 15-year-old. The mom goes a little bit crazy, so they send her off to the hospital. Son runs away with the money. The 15-year-old tries to set up Mr. Ogata to get arrested. Mr. Ogata the wife that's in the hospital tells Mr. Ogata he needs to divorce her and marry their daughter. And then she dies, and they don't end up together because the money's been run off with, and then at the end he makes a sex doll. The end.
Yeah, that's accurate.
I mean, I can't... The problem with this movie is there isn't a... It's, like I said, it jumps all over the place in time. Like, just in the very beginning, we start... Like, the way the movie opens, Mr. Ogata and his partner, who I don't remember his name... are walking up a hill with two of their quote-unquote actors. One of them is a prostitute, and the other is somebody he's recruited from some business. And the guy's like, has he ever acted before? No, but he's got a big member or something, basically. And it starts off, yeah, with them, you know, saying action and starting the film. And then we transition to kind of a voiceover thing during the credits where people are talking about watching one of these films. And like, you know, she's got a bad voice, but, you know, it's fine when they're doing things, blah, blah, blah. Why are they showing this carp? I don't know. Maybe it's supposed to be symbology or symbolism or something like that. Like, I don't know. And then it starts off in the 4x3 and it zooms into the full landscape. And that's where the movie starts. Yeah. Kind of.
Yeah, it's like an editing bay where they're. Yeah, I don't know that. This gets kind of meta.
Yeah, it starts off being meta. Like we go into a film that they were talking about, except for the people making the films. I'm pretty sure is supposed to be Mr. Agata and his partner.
Yeah, it's his film crew.
Right,
are the ones in it because at the end they say their names.
Yeah. And so Ogata is already sleeping with this widowed mom. You know, they're like kind of fooling around down, you know, up in their loft area. When all of a sudden they hear, you know, as somebody comes stomping by, they separate because they don't want to be caught necking. And in comes this grown-ass son, Koichi, who just jumps into bed with mom, crawls into her sleeping bag, and starts smothering his face into her body. They have such a freaking weird relationship. Okay. It's much more graphic, eh?
Yeah, Visitor Q does borrow quite a few stuff from this movie.
Yeah, so, I mean, it seems like Koichi the mother in the movie keeps on saying, like, you need to take care of Koichi, make sure Koichi's okay, all this stuff like that. So she obviously babies this kid, but he's just so weird.
Yeah, he's also stupid.
Yeah. Like, he's already gotten out of high school, I think, and they keep telling him he needs to test so he can get into this college. He basically has no interest in doing that. You know, he's already like, oh, I'm going to fail. I was too sick. It's so cold in the classroom. He's got a million excuses. You just want to strangle him. Reach into the movie and strangle him. Anyway. And it's the point that
the mom picks his clothes. His mom is Haru. And she even picks clothes for him every morning.
Absolutely. He can't do anything himself. He's calling in sick all the time. You know, calling in sick. He's not going to his classes because he's sick.
Yeah, so I guess he is in high school still?
I'm not sure. I am absolutely not sure. You know, I was trying to look at the Wikipedia article so I could follow along with whatever plot's there, and guess what? There is no plot.
Nope.
Okay. So basically, we follow Mr. Agata around as he goes through his, like, business deals and stuff like that. Like, him and his partners are trying to make two movies a day just to get enough money to get everything going and all that stuff like that. And the entire household is relying on Ogata's money because I guess the beauty shop or barber shop's not doing that well, but the son is constantly asking for money, and of course so is the daughter.
Yeah, and Ogata is very nice and will always give them money no matter what.
Right, he is a very nice person at first. Through most of the movie, really.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And there's...
Yeah, he's this... too nice, and people are always walking all over him.
Yeah. And the son, Koichi, and his mother are talking about, like, you shouldn't have gotten with Mr. Ogata so fast after Dad died and all this stuff like that. And the mother's always being like, oh, Mr. Ogata's not, he's fine. He's the only one supporting us, so you should be nicer to him. And then we get a flashback, without indicating it's a flashback, of Mr. Ogata coming downstairs and thanking Haru profusely for allowing him to stay there, even though he can't afford rent right now. And I think he borrows a little bit of money right there.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, you don't have to thank me. You help so much with the kids and the shop. It's just fine. And then she hurts herself and he, you know, goes to help her and she immediately goes, no, we mustn't. We can't. Like, he wasn't doing anything like that. But, I mean, she just keeps on saying, no, there's a whole reason we can't do this, but I really want to. And, you know, all this stuff. And he's like, well, I love you. And she's like, well, I love you too, but my dead husband doesn't want us to because the carp jumped. He's like, what? And then you see there is a very large carp inside of a much too small fish tank. Although the carp does get bigger as the time goes by, so it's pretty big already. And she says, that carp over there was born the same day my husband died, so it's the reincarnation of my husband. Anytime it jumps, I know there's trouble. Okay, that's there are a lot of shots of this carp. A lot of shots.
You see a lot of shots like from, like, seemingly the perspective of the carp sometimes too.
Yeah, at least from the carp's tank. You know, they do this thing where they put like this echo of their voices as if like it's reverberating through the water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the carp is also like a minor character.
Yeah, kind of. Even Ogata eventually tries to get rid of the carp. He tells Haru that he threw it out, and when he comes back, the carp is just there again.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. And he's kind of like dumbstruck, but that's the last time he tries to get rid of it until the end.
God, so much happens in this.
Yeah. See, I'm already losing track of, like, there's a part where he's showing his movie. It's one of the funny parts, because he's showing his movie to these clients, and they're like, oh, is that a real American? And then one of them's like, yeah, you can tell it's a real American. Everybody laughs. And it goes,
you can tell by the size.
Yeah. And he's not only distributing pornography movies, he distributes pornography pictures. Yeah. He distributes dirty stories, because there's a part where he's like in an office with like five other dudes, businessmen, and he's like, they're all looking at this thing, and he's like, as you can see, you know, it's different because this one has that kind of person and that kind of person doing it this way. And it's like, here's a coupon for the next time you want to get one of these. You know, so his business is going well.
Yeah, he has a whole studio.
But then he runs into a very slight snag, which is that he comes home one day, and there's a man who's getting his hair cut. And he says, hey, I'm part of what gang is it? Do you remember?
No.
It's like the Scorpion Gang or something like that. I don't know. He's like, hey, we want to get on your business. Like, what do you have here? You know, and Ogata's trying to hide his stuff. He doesn't want to share any of this thing. And the guy's like, come on, I'll take this. Now, how much for this right now? And he's like, oh, well, it's going to be 50,000 yen. He's like, that's retail. I'll give you 5,000. Ogata's like, it costs 30,000 just to make the print. Like, nope, here's 5,000 now, and here's a little bit extra money for the haircut. See you later, loser. It's like Biff Tannen.
Yeah, and he loses 16 films.
Yep. Just, boom. Sucks.
Yeah, and then after that, Keiko skipped school and got drunk with a bunch of boys.
Well, I mean, that's pretty far forward. That's a skip forward here, because there's I mean,
I think they go to the studio again, try working a printer.
That happens like towards the end of the movie. That's like the last 45 minutes. Oh. It's just so much stuff that happens. Anyways, Ogata, even though he deals in all this stuff like that, right? And he arranges with the prostitutes to work, and he's also arranging for men to sleep with prostitutes, it seems like, on the outside. Like, he meets with the... I assume that was the person you were talking about, the crusty old man that was like, I want to be with a virgin for once in my life. Do you know my wife wasn't a virgin when we got together? 40 years with a secondhand woman. Like, yeah, holy yeah, crap. That's
a pervy old man from End of Summer.
And yeah.
Other stuff.
Yeah. So Elgato says, okay, I'll get you a virgin. So he goes to the local brothel or whatever.
Yeah.
And he's like, I need somebody who can be, you know, a virgin for this guy. And she's like, well, what about this person? It's like, no, she's too mean. She's got a bad reputation. Like, okay, what about this person? I'm like, no, she yells a lot during sex, so you can tell that it's fake. So he would know she wasn't a virgin. It's like, what? And then he says, what about, you know, what this woman? She's like, oh, she definitely can't play a virgin. Well, why not? Because, and then that woman walks on screen. She's holding a baby. So she just had a baby.
Yeah.
But the madam convinces him, no, I can make her look like a virgin. See? She was wearing a corset, so the baby's small, and she doesn't have any milk. It's like, okay, well, how much? She's like, oh, 150,000 or something. Some really big number. He's like, what? That doesn't... No, it's like, that's a lot of money. She's like, oh, it's not that much for a virgin. Like, yep. Anyway, yeah. Oof. And that's not even like an important detail in this movie. It's no, just one of the things.
You get like maybe 3 scenes of it.
Yeah.
At most.
Yeah. So there is this reoccurring scene that happens twice that doesn't make any sense except for as symbolism. And I'd like to pick your brain about it.
What is it?
Mr. Ogata is getting, I assume, his stepdaughter ready for school. And this girl in this vision that we have, this part of the movie, is not the 15-year-old teenage daughter he has. No. It's a child. It's like a 7-year-old or something like that.
Yeah.
And he's saying, oh, you know, we got to do good in school, blah, 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 and, you know, strapping on her backpack. And she yells at him. She says, you're not my real father, so I don't have to listen to you, or something like that. I saw what you did to Mom. I don't like that you were mean to her. And she starts running, and she's running down this hallway towards the road. And he's calling out her name. And then she runs, turns the corner, and all of a sudden a truck rolls by and slams on its brakes. This is the second movie we've watched for this podcast where a vehicle potentially has hit somebody.
That's true.
So, yeah. So now the shot is from underneath the truck facing towards the hallway. We can see obviously it's supposed to be the little girl lying next to the truck, and Mr. Ogata is running towards it, calling her name. And then it freezes before he reaches her body the first time. Mm-hmm. It freezes for like 2 to 3 seconds, and then we go back to the modern time. I'm assuming it's the modern time. Now, the thing about this is that Mr. Ogata doesn't have a daughter that age. He hasn't been with the family that long.
It's mentioned that he was married before.
So you think maybe this is like a legitimate flashback to something that he had experienced, except for the girl says that he's not her father.
It's mentioned early on he's been with Haru for 7 years, and Keiko is 15, so.
Oh, okay, I missed that detail. So yeah. It could have been Keiko.
So I think it is Keiko.
So Keiko got hit by a truck and survived.
Yeah, and you see a scar on her thigh that he keeps grabbing throughout the movie and staring at.
And he feels responsible for that.
Yeah.
Which is why he wants to put his penis inside of her.
Yeah, that's why he's attracted to his stepdaughter, because he feels guilty. I don't know.
No! Bad movie.
I think he's just attracted to his stepdaughter for some reason.
I think, yeah. Well, he's got it. She looks very much like Haru, the mother. Like, they picked a good actress-to-actress comparison type thing.
Yeah, it's really good.
Similarities. And okay, so that whole flashback scene, we do get to see a second time towards the end of the movie, or at least towards maybe the second half.
Yes.
Except for it continues on. It doesn't freeze that time. It continues on a little bit where he actually picks up the little girl's body. And yeah, then we still, it never gets like connected. The fact that she has been with her since she was 7 is just, that just really grosses me out. It also sucks that like Koichi doesn't have any like strong attachment to him though, if he's been there for 7 years.
No, well, Koichi is lazy and stupid. So I think you're supposed to gather he's always been lazy and stupid.
I see.
At least that's how I see it.
Well, he's a lot like his father, who we also never hear anything about other than he's a fish.
Yeah.
He's a fish now.
Do you think the father actually is the carp? Like, do you think there is a fantasy element to this movie? Or do you think it's just...
No, I think it has to... Yeah, it has to do with the mom's psychosis.
Okay. I don't know, but the fish does jump at certain key points where it's like, maybe the fish is on to it.
I think the fish is just horny. he sees two people going at it, and he's got to jump up there.
I guess. I don't race carp. How would I know?
Yeah. Exactly.
Is that your job, carp wrangler?
Well, I raise rainbow trout, which is very similar to carp in that they're both fish.
That is factual.
Yep. Don't test me. I know the answers. No, I don't, because I don't even know where to go from this point. I mean, he was peeking in on his 15-year-old while she was changing.
Yeah, and I think she notices.
Yeah, she definitely knows. And then after she leaves, he takes his chance to, you know, take a little smell of her underwear. Why not?
Yeah.
I have to say, this is the first time that's happened in one of the movies we've watched. And it's something that I've seen referenced in anime 1,000 times. You think it would be more prevalent or something.
I get maybe Imamura was brave enough to really show
cutting edge cinematic themes like and underwear sniffing and mechanical doll making.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, as crazy as it is, it's still a really well made movie.
Yeah, I'm laughing at it because it's ridiculous, but it has so many good things going on. Like you kind of get your mind blown by like how many like cinematic treats that are just like waiting there. I just kept getting blown away by what they did, you know?
Yeah, like I said already, but I am amazed this was even allowed to be made at all.
Yeah. You bring people in because it says the pornographers. Hopefully they stayed because it was a good movie, you know?
Yeah. I'm glad Criterion picked this one up.
So what do you think Koichi and Haru's relationship is? Because there's... after that whole jumping into the sack with her to, you know, quote-unquote get warm... There's a part later where he's complaining about his stomach, and so he goes and lies down, and she's rubbing on his stomach. And then she says something like, I can't even remember the context. He says, like, he needs a higher power to help him or something like that. And he's not talking about God, but I don't know. I'm not even sure. But it's pervy. Yeah, no more visitor queue. Get that out of your brain.
I can't, because this movie reminds me of it. Well, in visitor queue, it ends with the son eating his breastfeeding off his mother, and the son is like 15.
Ah, so it's like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and the dad is on the other breast.
Well, that's like Grapes of Wrath. No, I don't know.
Yeah,
not Grapes of Wrath. I can't remember. There's some Dust Bowl novel where an old man gets to breastfeed because he's starving.
Do you think it's weird that humans are only animals that drink milk from another species?
I mean, only in the sense that we have the conscience to get any material from other animals in a non-lethal way.
I guess. I think it's weird that, like...
I mean, like, I don't know what I'm talking about,
like,
but...
Like, drinking, like, human milk is seen as weird, yet drinking cow milk is seen as, like, perfectly okay, where every other mammal, like, drinks only milk from its own species.
Yeah, and then but they don't drink it for, like, their whole life.
That's true.
So, it is weird. It would be... I mean, think about it. You've seen Mad Max Fury Road. They got the milk farm up there.
Yeah, they do.
That's weird. You think of it not coming from an animal's breast, which is what it... I mean, is a cow's udder their breast? Yeah, I guess it must be.
It's the nipples.
Well, what if a woman's nipples were near its rear end? Come on. No, I don't... This movie has made me lose my mind.
There's a Reddit thing I saw a few weeks ago where it's like an MRA thing where the guy was complaining that, you know, never mind, I don't want to get into this.
Let's just wholeheartedly say fuck MRA. So where to go from this movie? Like, Haru is sick. They keep re-emphasizing that this Mr. Ogata's wife is ill, and she's got something with her heart or something else like that. They don't really explain what's going on with her.
Yeah, it sounds like it was caused by her mental state.
Yeah.
Or maybe they coexisted.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But she gets these bouts of illness. She has to stay in bed all the time. And eventually she does actually get moved to a hospital for the rest of the movie.
And she gets the carp taken to her room, too.
Oh, absolutely, of course. She has to have her husband with her.
Yeah.
Not the living one, the other one.
Yeah. The OG husband.
Yeah. And So, like we said, Mr. Ngana is nice to his stepchildren. And he takes his stepdaughter out with him on a business meeting. And everybody teases him. Oh, yeah, he did right. He got a young wife. He's like, this is my daughter, not my wife. All that stuff like that. And when they go home, he's drunk. I don't think she is, you know, because she's 15.
Mm. Well, she gets drunk a couple times.
Yeah, I mean, later she's definitely doing stuff like that. But he, like, kisses her before they go into the house. And they both just kind of play it off like whatever, like it was a thing. And, it doesn't come up for a little bit. I mean, that's obviously you've just crossed a line there, buddy. Then let's go to the next comedy bit, which, of course, has to go back to the pornography, which is a really gross comedy bit, but it is funny. Mm-hmm. Because of the way people react. For some reason, this other guy that wanted the virgin, I think, has decided that he'd also like one of the movies, a movie of the situation he wants to happen, which is that he gets to assault a schoolgirl. Like, literally, that's what he's like, says at one point, like, if I don't get to have sex with a virgin, I may just have to attack a schoolgirl.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, I mean, that's like a real thing. It's disgusting. Yeah. Anyway, so they're making a special porn movie for just for this client.
Oh, is this where they get
Yes.
Okay.
So they've got this girl dressed in the school uniform, and she's wearing a black wig. And they're trying to tell her what's going to happen. They've got an older man, and they address him as a professor, I believe.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, so he's going to walk in the room, and you need to look at him. Stupid phone. Not supposed to go off during a podcast. Anyway. Hold on a second. Sorry. No, go ahead.
And the girl is Well, she's mentally challenged, and it's hard for her to understand taking a direction.
Right. No, and none of the people making the movie knew that, but the guy, the older guy who's playing the professor, the one who's going to have sex with this person, presumably, is like, why isn't she paying attention? She's like catatonic. She's not doing anything. Oh, that's what he is. He's playing a doctor because he like takes out a lollipop and hands it to her. And one of the few actions she has is she like eats the lollipop real quick.
And like in one bite.
He's like, oh, she's slow. And they're like, slow? What do you mean by slow? And he's like, and he says the R word. Well, she's R, you know?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, I don't think this is right. I don't think we should be doing this. And the old guy's like, no, it's just fine. Don't worry. Everything's going to be fine. Yeah. Okay. He's like, oh, okay. Well, we're going to have to rethink the scene though, if she can't act. So we reset the scene. She is lying on the ground, presumably sleeping, although she's supposed to be pretending to sleep. And they're like, okay, so in this scene, you're gonna crawl in through that window with this mask on, and you're gonna rape her. Like, okay, great, guys. And I mean, it's just ridiculous. This is a terrible thing that I'm describing, but it is ridiculous, and it is funny because of how ridiculous it is.
Yeah, it's done in like the most tolerable way it could be done.
Yeah. Like, we're not seeing anything. Like that's the one thing that's kind of consistent with these pornos that are being made, is that we don't actually see anything. And so the guy crawls through the window, and he climbs on top of this girl, and she puts her arms around him, like a loving embrace. And they're like, hey, wait a minute. If he's a robber, she shouldn't be doing that. And then the girl opens her eyes and she starts screaming. She starts yelling her head off and runs off to the other side of the room. And everyone's like, what is going on? Why is she, you know, what's going on here? And the old man runs off to her and hands her a sucker. It's like, no, it's okay. Oh, it's okay. Look, takes off the mask. Look, it's just daddy. Don't worry. It's just daddy. And he's like, everything's fine. And from off screen, you hear the other people going like, daddy, what the fuck, daddy? And that's the end of the scene. But it's just it's so fucking stupid. And this actually goes into one of the foreshadowing things I was talking about, where the people making the film, is not going to be made at this point, obviously, talking about, like, I think they're at a spa together. Mm-hmm. And they're just talking about, like, I can't believe this, you know, that crazy situation happened. I mean, like, what kind of father does it take to, like, end up wanting to sleep with your daughter or something like that? And one of the people that's with them is like, mm-hmm. What's wrong with that? Why shouldn't a father want to sleep with a daughter?
Yeah, I didn't even realize that was foreshadowing.
Yep. I think it's one of the things that may plant a seed, I guess. It's like, why would anyone take that side? It's like a message board or something. I don't know.
I want to read the book if, like, it's anything close to this.
Yeah, I'm very curious. And I have to say that everything we just discussed is really upsetting outside of the context of the movie. The movie makes it funny, though. It's a terrible thing that they're talking about.
Yeah, like it just shows how good of a director Imamura is, since he can make these very awful things like genuinely funny.
Yeah. So at this point, I'm already getting fuzzy. Like, all that stuff that we've just mentioned, that's like in the first 30 minutes of the movie, maybe 40 minutes. And it's a over 2 hour long movie. And so this son character is kind of a real jerk. He keeps coming back and asking for more money from his mom. He never talks to Mr. Ogata, like, directly. He only goes through his mother, who, like we said, babies him. And he wants to move into an apartment rather than continue trying to get into this college. Yeah, you know, the school with the tuition. He has a
friend who has a good job or something.
Yeah. Yeah, and he says that he wants to go on an apartment with him, but he needs like 200,000 yen or something like that. So some crazy number. And at first, this doesn't actually seem like it would be an issue for Mr. Ogata because he does make a lot of money. But then he gets arrested. Just kind of out of the blue, they take him in and they confiscate all his stuff.
Yeah, and this is when the family learns what he actually does.
Well, the children. Apparently, Haru already knew. Oh, and yeah, she's trying to convince him, like, no, he's a good man. He's been a good man this whole time. Like, I don't. This is just something he does. It's not hurting anyone.
That's true, I guess.
She has this whole speech about how it's actually good for the community because it's helping these people. I don't know the context.
Yeah, like she says, making porn is better than murder or stealing, which I guess is true.
Wasn't that Donald Trump's campaign?
Sure, let's not talk about that creature.
Come on, we're bringing up MRA, Donald Trump. We're doing everything here.
Yeah.
All 17 of our subscribers, boom, gone. No. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, eventually Ogata does hook up with the younger daughter.
Yeah, I don't remember how it happens initially.
Yeah, I'm kind of forgetting the context. I mean, there's a part where she's out partying with her friends and they like bring her home. And they're like, hey, give us the cab money. You know, we brought her back after she got all drunk and stuff like that. And he's like, you guys are irresponsible. You shouldn't have let her do this. And they're like, well, she was the one who was getting the beer and stuff like that. You're blaming us. And it's like, I'm not going to pay for your cab. So they leave. And then the cab driver comes up. He's like, they told me to come talk to you. So he has to end up paying for the cab. And he takes her upstairs. And tells her she needs to work harder at school. He really does like trying to emphasize that they should be going to school, they should be studying and stuff like that.
Yeah, like he is a genuinely caring father.
Yeah. But he... what is the daughter's name?
Keiko.
Keiko, like, says... like, she hasn't been saying anything this whole time. And then she says, okay... You can kiss me, but just once. And she, like, closes her eyes, waiting for him to kiss her. So, I guess she's into it? I'm not sure. She's drunk. She is drunk, though.
Yeah, I guess maybe she just wants to get it over with.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But he kind of leans in like he's going to, but they get interrupted by the son, who is coming in looking for money or something like that. And, like, I can't emphasize enough how complicated this movie is.
It's definitely worth watching a bunch of times because, one, it's good, too, so you can straighten out all the details.
Yeah. And, like, the story parts we're talking about aren't even, like, the interesting parts. I mean, they're funny, and they keep the pace going, I guess. But, I mean, it's anyways, Ogata and his partners have run into an issue. Because not only did the cops bust them, but they also busted the place where they've been getting their film developed. And so one of them is like, well, why don't we just buy our own printer? Why don't we buy our own stuff like that? You know, it's going to be like 800,000 yen. But once we do that, we can start making our own stuff as often as we want to. And like everyone agrees this is a good idea. So that appears to be the next step. Haru is in the hospital, and so Ogata goes and visits her and asks for, like...
The bank book.
Yeah, he asks for the bank book. Before that happens, though, we have a scene where Keiko is talking to Haru at the hospital. And Haru's like, I can tell something's wrong. I know something is bad with you. You just need to tell me. And Keiko finally says, I hate Mr. Ogata. I want you to get rid of him. I want you to tell him to leave me alone. And her mother's like, oh my God, I knew this was going to happen, you know, with me not being in the house. Don't worry, honey, I'll take care of it. And so the scene kind of cuts, and Keiko is on the other side of one of just like a sheet, basically separating the the sick beds. And Ogata is there talking to Haru about the bank book. And Haru says, listen, I want you to divorce me, and I want you to take over the business, and I want you to marry my daughter. I want you to marry Keiko. And he's like, what are you talking about? She's like, Keiko already told me, and I know that's what you guys both want. Like, what? That's not what she said. Yeah. And you can see Keiko getting pissed on the other side. She is not happy about any of this crap.
Yeah, and at one point he bumps into her and he assumes it's a nurse. And it's like, oh, are they going to find out? Oh, no.
Yep.
They're not going to see each other.
Yeah, I didn't even realize there was a sheet between them at first. I thought she was just kind of standing back there. They were talking about this. Like, I expected Ogata to be like, did you tell your mother this or something like that? Hey, yeah.
Oh, but I'm looking at the cast list, and the name of the whorehouse is the Virgin House.
Oh, okay. Well, you think that would have been where they keep them.
Yep.
Or maybe that's where the virgins go. I'm not sure. It's where the virgins go. Yeah, so... Okay. After this point, something else I'm sure happens. There are a whole bunch of things that happen that are, like, really awesome-looking shots. Mm-hmm. And a lot of artistry. Like I said, there's entire conversations that are done in this kind of echo thing because they're supposed to be shot from the perspective of the carp listening to Haru and Mr. Ogata talk. And it's really, I mean, it's just really cool. And so narratively, the next thing that important happens is that we see Keiko hanging out with her hooligan friends. And when I say hooligans, I mean they are just like hooligans. Eventually they become gang members, for God's sake.
They do?
Yeah. That's what they say during the flash forward.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember that now.
And anyways, a bunch of guys break into the house and start like looking for the pornographic material and everything like that. And they beat up Ogata and his partner really bad. You know, the black eyes and cuts on their heads and stuff like that.
I thought that was a studio.
I mean, they don't have a studio yet.
I thought it was like where they get their pictures and stuff.
Maybe it was. I'm not sure. Yeah, anyways, this place gets trashed. They get beat up. And then apparently after this gets done, everybody gets arrested because Ogata has to go to the police station and get Keiko out. And they're, like, talking about the photos she has or something. Like I said, it's just so complicated.
Yeah.
That's going to be, like, my crutch. I keep going back to it. But Ogata is walking home with Keiko, and he's like, oh, you know, now you really focus on your studies. He's not mad at her or anything like that because he doesn't know she was involved. And eventually Keiko, you know, yells, like, what he asks her, like, why did you do what you did? And she's like, I wanted you to get arrested. I wanted you to get caught with the pornography and for you to go to jail. There's a certain point where he starts, like, I don't remember. There's a place where he's, like, smacking her in the face over and over again. Do you remember what this happens?
I can't remember the context, but I remember him smacking her for some reason.
He does it, like, a whole bunch of times. That's uncomfortable, but it's shot really well. See, I can't even parse out where to go from here. Because he does eventually end up sleeping with her.
Yeah.
And the mother is going increasingly more bonkers. Like, she's got a mental health issue.
Yeah, she starts to try to strip in the balcony of a window.
Right, before that happens, though, the bank book, like Mr. Ogata goes back to talk about the money, the bank book that he was supposed to get, and she says she gave it to I keep forgetting the son's name.
Koichi.
Koichi, the dipshit. And he was supposed to give it to Mr. Ogata, which of course he didn't. Yeah, and so he got all that money. Yeah. Eventually, Koichi shows up at the hospital and he's dressed in this like really nice suit. And he's like, "Mom, like everything's going to be fine." And she's like, "Oh, you look so nice." All this stuff like that. It's like, "Yep, we're going to move into a new house and everything." He's like trying to sell her on something. She's like, "But you stole that money. You were supposed to just go and give it to Mr. Ogata." He's like, no, come with me. Come with me. So they like go downstairs in the hospital. And they're at the bottom of these stairs, but there's this really long hallway. And she's talking to him about like, he shouldn't have taken that money and stuff like that. He's like, "No, I want you to meet someone. Like, she's very excited to meet you. It's my common law wife." And at the very end of this long hallway, a woman appears and she's dressed in like a jacket and she's got like, it looks like a very big belt, but it turns out to be a scarf wrapped around this jacket. And this woman slowly starts walking towards where they are, you know, walking towards the camera through this long, dark hallway. And the mom and the son are arguing this whole time, you know, like, you know, about like, "Oh, Mr. Ogata, blah, blah, blah." Like, he's like, "Well, you don't have to be with him anymore. You know, he's mean to you and other stuff like that." And she's like, "No, I love him. That's why I'm with him." He's like, "Oh, you love him? Well, then blah, blah, blah." And as this woman is walking in the distance, walking towards the camera, she takes the scarf off of her middle and then she takes off the coat and she just kind of throws it aside. And then the hallway goes black. And you can't help but wonder, like, well, is this like a dream? Is this some sort of nightmare sequence or something like that? But the lights come back on the hallway and the woman's a little bit closer. But it also looks like, I think that when she took off the jacket, she was wearing kind of like a dress or something like that, at least a dressing gown. Mm-hmm. But when the lights come back up, she's wearing lingerie and she's just kind of casually swinging this scarf that she had around there, the scarf that apparently Haru knitted for her son. And as they continue to argue and stuff like that, he mentions that, like, "Oh, Mom, calm down. You know, don't yell so much. She's pregnant. She's like 3 months pregnant. So she's very sensitive to sound and Mom's freaking out about this." And the woman just keeps on walking closer and closer until she gets to where they are and the camera is then in this woman's face, this woman who we've never met before, but she's just kind of like looking down at the camera and smiling. And it's like, my words don't do justice to how like breathtaking this particular scene is, in my opinion. And if we were to skip forward in the story, we might as well go to that next part, because that's another amazing sequence where Mr. Ogata goes to see Haru as he, once again, she's saying, like, you need to divorce me and you need to marry my daughter. I'm okay with it. And at this point, I think he's basically like, okay, that sounds like a good idea to me, whatever.
Do you think the first time she mentioned it was foreshadowing that she is not mentally there anymore?
I don't know. I don't know what that was supposed to be. Like, because
before that, she didn't seem that.
She didn't seem. Confused. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like that might be foreshadowing of like, oh, she's not mentally there and she needs help.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they were going for. But like we said, she has a strange relationship with everybody in the house. So maybe that was part of it. But yeah, at this point, like they seem like they're having a nice time, and they even like have sex for, I presumably the last time for them.
Yeah,
and he's just hanging out with her afterwards, and they're talking about like how nice it was and Oh, she's plenty healthy. Whatever. And then she just kind of starts singing. Or no, she starts talking. I don't remember exactly what she sang.
I thought it was like a folk song, like traditional song or something.
That's after she like starts climbing to the window, but before that she starts saying stuff like, I can't even remember. Like, oh, I got that pic, you know, Keiko told me everything about it, everything, and I got that picture you sent her. I got that picture, and she like shows him this picture, and it's a picture of Keiko, but her eyes are like, she's got like bunch of pins stuck in her eyes.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
And so, yeah, Haru's just freaking out. She's like climbing to the window. Ogata runs and goes to get the doctor. He's like, you need to help out here. And the doctor's like, what did you do? Like, what did I do? I had sex with her. Come on. I know. But she's like climbing onto the window, trying to climb out. So they both try to pull her back in, but she's apparently too strong for these men and pushes them away. And her robe is partially open and she's yelling, and there is like literally a crowd down below that are just like looking at this woman, you know, making a huge scene. But there's no way for her to get out of the window. Like the bars are made in such a way so that people can't like jump over or slide out or anything like that. She just climb all over them. And then we break away from this shot to her being behind a gate in a desert kind of situation where a car, she is stuck behind this gate that is standing by itself. It's not attached to a fence or anything like that. She is just like looking at through the gate, looking kind of crazy. And it's obviously a vehicle is pulling away. You don't hear the vehicle, but yeah, there's,
I interpret that as that's her like her mental landscape.
Yeah.
Like, that's how she sees the world right now.
At a certain point, too, when she was yelling at the crowd, the sound of her yelling disappeared, and it was replaced by surf rock music. And the funny thing is, I was actually watching this in my car through the car speakers, and I was like, did I get a pirate radio or something like that? What's going on here? Like, nope, that's the movie. And not shortly after this, Haru dies.
And Koichi lays next to her corpse like he did in the beginning.
Yeah. I think before he does... Is it before he does that he's actually cleared out their house, too?
Maybe?
I can't remember. No, it happens after the funeral. They have a funeral. It's... There's actually a guy in a loudspeaker that's like, bring your donations to the front. Thank you for coming by. It's kind of weird. And Mr. Ogata takes the carp. He picks it up out of the small tank it's in and takes it over to the river. And it says, if it wasn't for you, you know, everything would have been fine. But you had to butt your head into this. And he throws the carp into the river. And at this point... Koichi. I was going to say, Koichi like goes and takes everything from the house, including all of the beauty salon supplies and everything like that, leaving Ogata with like nothing.
And I think it's this around time Keiko has her friends over and they talk about taking turns with her.
Yeah, after they got arrested, the two guys that were in the car with her got sent off to, what is that kind of school? I can't remember what it's called.
Juvenile?
I mean, like here it would be like a juvenile detention center, but there it's like...
Reform?
Reform school?
Maybe?
Yeah, something like that. And they broke out so that they could go do her, although only one of them has time to do it.
Yeah.
And the other one, you know, is very disappointed. But
I was going to say I thought that's from a different movie, but I watched School of the Holy Beast, this Japanese nunsploitation movie, where there's an identical scene.
Made me think of Crazed Fruit.
Yeah, but on Craig's Fruit, it's like five guys and that one girl.
Right.
And their brother's kind of like, yeah, you all took a turn on her.
Yeah. And why not, guys?
Like, yeah, and the little brother's like, that's so cool.
Radical. Syphilis. Sounds like he needs to watch a little movie called The Quiet Duel. So, I guess, I don't think he actually ends up marrying Keiko.
No, he doesn't.
But he loses the ability to get an erection. And this is brought up a couple of times because he's, like, messing around with some medicine. Actually, the medicine comes into play before Haru dies, but the medicine apparently is no longer working after she passes away. And he gets told by his other partner that the other guy that they were buying the equipment with actually stole mm-hmm. all the equipment and ran off. And so he can't even report it to the police because they were going to use it for illegal activities anyways.
Yeah. And then his buddy Cabo says, let's have an orgy.
Hey, why not? I mean, what are you doing? Let's have an orgy.
And that orgy scene is filmed very well.
Yeah, we hear like his internal monologue as he's walking through Ogaru, who is fully dressed and he's carrying kind of a candelabra. And there's just people, you know, writhing together. Everyone's in their underwear. There's nobody naked. There is a naked statue, though. So if you're interested in seeing nude statues, there's at least one. And he's just kind of commenting like, you know, we need to go back to this style. This is the way the animals do it. And this is, you know, this is more natural, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm not seeing enough action there. And he kind of like nudges somebody, you know. But eventually he walks out of it and he's like, even seeing this orgy, I thought it would cheer me up, but I still can't get it up.
Yeah, I think his friend says a good old orgy will cheer anyone up.
Yeah. Guess he was wrong.
Yeah.
Wasn't the right kind.
And so then he kind of mentally snaps?
Yeah, well, his friend starts talking about, you know, like, things are easier when you only have to work with machines because they don't make much noise, which is not true. And if something's wrong, you just got to replace the part. And they start both talking about a Dutch doll. A Dutch wife.
Which I guess was like an old toy.
I'm Googling it right now.
Yeah, and so he decides to make an eternal virgin.
Yeah, so that's what he decides to do. We flash 5 years into the future. Keiko is running this beauty salon now. She's in her 20s. She even comments on that. Everybody's like, oh, you were so wild when you were 15. Like, oh, but I'm in my 20s now. And outside of their home, there is a boat in the river. And the stepson there, goes out with this businessman, and he's, you know, yelling for Mr. Ogata, Mr. Ogata. Mr. Ogata comes out, and he's, you know, he's got a crazy man's beard. Not really. He's just got a little bit of facial hair, and he's got longer hair on his head. And he's like, hey, this businessman wants to buy your sex doll. They're like, yes, I've seen the photos, and we're very interested in sending a prototype to the South Pole, you know, where there aren't women. And Mr. Gata's like, no. It's like, no, but we'll pay you a lot of money. Come work for our company. He's like, no, this doll is not for the South Pole. It's not for anything like that. I'm still working on it. There's a part where Keiko, like, throws down some of the hair she's cut for him, too. So.
Yeah.
And
that their roles have reversed.
Yeah. And the businessman's like, I've got 1,000,000 yen. Here, take this 1,000,000 yen. And he tries to walk onto the boat. And, you know, Gata pushes the boat away, so he falls into the river. And goes back into his little hut. And he's literally working on, like, it's not a doll. I mean,
it's a machine.
It's a machine. He's polishing the legs, and it looks just like his dead wife, basically.
Yeah, and he calls it Haru.
Yep. And his partner's there, and he's like, I'm actually, before his partner was saying that he didn't understand why people needed women, like he thought masturbation was just fine. Mm-hmm. And now he's like, I've actually got kind of a girlfriend. It's actually my sister, and we don't have sex, but, you know, she says she loves me. And Okada's like, no, that's not normal. That's not a girlfriend, man. That's not normal. He's like, you're telling me I'm not normal? You, who's working on this sex machine? Like, this is fine.
Tom Savini from Dusk Till Dawn.
What's that?
Tom Savini from Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah, you're making a full model of sex machine.
Yeah.
It's got a gun where in his belt buckle.
Yeah, and he's going to have a blonde facial hair.
And then Fred Williamson comes in. Is that who that is?
Yeah, Fred Williamson.
Yeah.
Noted Trump supporter.
Let's talk about From Dusk Till Dawn. He's a noted Trump supporter. Well, everybody has their flaws.
Yeah, he loves Trump.
I mean, he's a crazy old man.
I mean, yeah, he's an action star, so of course he kind of has that kind of more conservative. I feel like, never mind.
We're going to get into it right now again.
I feel like the whole action star macho-ness kind of leads you to more like a right-wing form of thinking.
Apparently. I'm not sure.
I don't know. It makes sense, but I'm not sure why.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those people are just full of contradictions. You know, like Steven Seagal is all about saving the environment and peace, but he also is very conservative in how he thinks women and men should be in relationships, and he votes conservatively. Or Arnold Schwarzenegger, who obviously ran under Republican tickets and got voted in, is also a very, when it comes to a lot of like environmental and human rights, he's very liberal. He's very progressive. And it's kind of weird. But I guess that's part of the thing people are trying to emphasize right now. It's like, it doesn't have to be black or white. It could be a spectrum. You could be a Republican who still wants people to live and be happy. And, you know, I know people that are Republican that I'm very good friends with that did not vote for Trump. So, but they still consider themselves Republicans.
I don't know anyone like
that. Yeah, it's really hard. You know. Anyways, the end of this movie. This is the very end. Mr. Ogata's staying up all night. He's sewing his hair into his robot wife's pube area.
So how will this machine work?
It doesn't even have any mechanical parts, so it looks like a papier-mâché doll, except for a little bit more realistic than even I would like to look at. It's kind of creepy. Yeah.
It's like, it reminds me of the sketch from Mr. Show where there's like a milking machine and the Jack Black character gets his penis stuck in it.
You think that happened in A Clockwork Orange at any point?
In the movie?
Oh, wait, you mean like one of those like automatic milkers they hook up to the cows.
There's a sketch where it's like Jack Black, it's a musical sketch, and Jack Black is like doing a song and he gets tempted by the devil to put his dick in a milking machine.
And Jack Black's actually a very reserved person. I don't think he would actually put his penis into one of those. I just want that on the record.
Well, his character from Mr. Show, it's season one, I think episode 3 or 4.
Sarah met him, okay? He's a nice guy.
Yeah, he is on the best sketch show ever made, Mr. Show.
I think you're talking about, I don't know and I don't have an opinion on this.
You need to watch Mr. Show, it's great.
I don't like comedy. I like movies like this that are funny.
But Mr. Show is David Cross and Brian Posehn and...
I don't like Bob Odenkirk. Just kidding. I love Bob Odenkirk.
Because Jill Talley, she's like even hotter Shelley Duvall.
I don't think people think Shelley Duvall is hot, man. Just you and maybe a couple of other people.
That's probably true.
I don't think she's ugly or anything like that, but she doesn't... I wouldn't say she's hot.
Well, you're crazy.
I mean, yeah, I am crazy, obviously. I mean, I built a sex doll on my boat.
Yeah, and so the boat just floats away.
Yeah, like, it's been tied up to the thing, but through a series of events, one rope breaks, another rope breaks, and then the line that apparently is giving him access to power snaps, and his reaction is not to go out and see what the hell happened. His reaction is just to light a candle and be like, "Oh, Haru, the power went out. That's okay, I'll keep you safe. Boy, this boat sure is rocky."
I guess Kabo is still there?
No, I think he was just visiting. I mean, he lives with his sister. I mean, his girlfriend.
Yeah, his girlfriend.
That's the end of the movie.
No, it isn't.
No? What else? Oh, yeah.
It's back to the editing room.
I forgot.
And Kabo is talking to someone.
And they're saying, like, wait, does he die on that boat?
This doesn't make any sense.
Yep. Like, I don't know. Let's go to the next film. Okay. Oh, this movie was really good. The ending, like, I believe you said on it that the ending was kind of dumb or lackluster, but I still think everything leading up to everything else was just mind-blowing.
My memory was the end was not so great, but watching again is like, no, it's a good ending.
Yeah.
So I guess Kabo exists in both realities?
Like I said, I think that's the real... I think that the movie is not the reality that is really going on, but I'm not sure now.
Like, aside from just the great filmmaking, like, in terms of story, it kind of tackled... Like there are a lot... I wrote down, like, the four main themes in it, which are manhood, money, freedom, and sex, because there's a lot of talk about, like, being free and having, like, having the money to be free.
Yeah.
In the society. And, like, the end feels like the... And, like, in with manhood, like, what's his name? Ogata is trying to be, like a good father and a good man, yet he, despite how hard he tries, he keeps failing at it. And, like, to him, like, on some level, I think it means having money. So, I'm not sure where I'm going with this. Do you know what I'm saying?
No, I wasn't listening.
Okay. But, like, the end feels like the ultimate mix of all the, of, like, manhood, him building the sex doll, and that throws in sex, and he's free to do what he wants, and he's trying to, I don't know, it's...
Yeah.
Thematically, it's very interesting with, like, just what it's, like, the motifs throughout and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's so much to chew on. Like, I immediately went and was like, okay, how much for the disc? Okay, putting that in my Amazon cart for some time when I have more money.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, there's just, I need to watch it again to get a clearer picture.
I think it's rewarding with another view. Like I said, I rewatched the first half hour, and I was already seeing a bunch of stuff that I wouldn't have picked up on because I didn't realize it was kind of foreshadowing anything.
Yeah, listeners, sorry there's not much post-discussion, it's a dense meal of a movie.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing in this case. It's the guy who picks and battleships, so it's, you know, it's quality.
But
yeah, I hope this stuff is easily available.
Yeah, we should say that this movie was not... It used to be on Filmstruck, but they took it off. But it is in full on YouTube.
With subtitles?
Yeah, with the English subtitles.
Yeah, and it's on Criterion DVD.
As far as I can tell, there was nothing wrong with the version on YouTube either.
No, it looked great. And yeah, it's on Criterion DVD. It's not in a pack where you have to pay $80 or whatever. It's solo, so you can get it for a good, decent price.
Yep. It's like less than $20.
Yeah. I checked. It's about the same as the John Waters movie on Criterion. The one with the scene in a church where Divine... Never
mind. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I'm trying to... The hell? That's not...
Oh, Multiple Maniacs.
Multiple Maniacs, yeah.
Yeah, which has a great scene where it's about a freak show, like a dirty Baltimore freak show, and there's this... And one of the acts is two men kissing, and you hear a crowd say, "I hear homosexuals wear makeup sometimes."
My God. That sounds great.
It's a great movie, and there's a disgusting scene in a church that... Yep.
So yeah. Why did you pick this movie as our special edition? Is there any particular... I mean, technically I picked this movie, but you gave me a list.
I gave you two options. One is... It was a Kinoshita movie.
Right.
That won the Oscar for Best Foreign Film or whatever. I forgot what it's called. And this one, a nice one. I want an excuse to watch this again. Pretty much, because I remember liking it a lot.
Mm-hmm. But there must have been a theme, right? I mean, do you only watch porn in September? Is that what's going on?
Jeez, no.
He just wanted to pick a Japanese movie.
Yeah, because I was thinking of going with, like, a Vietnamese movie.
Yeah.
But Joel said no.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's not... I mean, I'm not totally against that, but not for the context of what this podcast is about, which is Japanese movies.
That's true.
Right now.
And the Vietnamese movie, it won the Oscar for Best Foreign Film in, like, 94, I think. And there's a kid who keeps farting. And... kind of like it's
like Good Morning.
It's kind of similar a little bit, actually.
Sounds good.
But so this is 1966. Got other movies from this year that you want to point out?
Well, I mean, we already watched Tokyo Drifter, which is from this year, and The Face of Another also came out this year, which is good.
Also true.
Mm-hmm. Other movies, there is a movie that I'm sure any film nerd probably already knows about this. It's New Czech Wave, I believe, Daisies, directed by Vera Chaitalova.
Daisies is great.
It is just like a feast for the eyes and for the mind. It is so good. And if you wanted me to describe the plot, I couldn't. It's about two young ladies and... stuff goes absurdist.
In the opening scene, he said he wanted to be spoiled because the world's coming. Because I interpret it as the world's coming more westernized and more Americanized, so they just want to be spoiled like Americans.
Yeah, well.
And so they spend the whole movie trying to, like, go on dates with older men and going to fancy restaurants.
Yep, just stuffing their maws.
Yeah, it gets really, really odd.
It's a really cool movie. It's just like it's not repeatable. Like you could like pay tribute to it. You could not ever try to reproduce it.
Yeah, it's great. Another Czech movie is Closely Watched Trains, which won the Oscar for Best Foreign Film, and it's about a boy who's trying to lose his virginity. But it's set in, wait for it, Nazi-occupied Czechoslovakia.
Scary.
And it's pretty much like a teen sex comedy, but with, like, real dramatic tension.
And Nazis.
Backdrop.
I see.
Well, it's Nazis meaning the communist regime.
Oh, okay.
But they can't criticize a communist regime directly, so they have to do Nazis.
Makes sense.
But the movie is very funny. It's also very dark. And it's on Criterion. I have the DVD. It feels like a Wes Anderson movie a bit. Has that, like, style to it.
Huh.
And the opening is... The humor is very, very dry. And the opening is probably one of the funniest openings to a movie if I've ever seen.
Yep.
Where kids, the characters is describing his family and like the type of men in his family. It's definitely worth watching. You got another one? I got a couple more.
Yeah, I've got like several, honestly. Do you have Black Girl on there? Have you seen that one?
No, but I've seen most of another Sabeni movie.
Yeah.
Azala, which is a sex comedy he did.
Yeah, this, I mean, this one's pretty, it's, if I remember correctly, it's all done, like, narratively from the, like, the Black Girl, titular Black Girl, representative thing, third person. And it's kind of has this really dark humor to it, but it's, I mean, it's just very good. It's 65 minutes long, so it's an easy watch.
It's the only, no, it's the third African movie on Criterion.
Mm. But she's in southern France. Is it actually African?
African director.
Oh, well, then I guess that counts. African director. Nice.
Well, he's credited as the first truly African director.
Truly.
Yeah, because there had been films made in Africa before by white people, but this is a guy who from Senegal.
Was it? Yeah.
Was a nation by then. But, yeah. I can't remember his name. Okay, so another movie this year is Grand Prix. I haven't seen it, but what's important is it's Toshiro Mifune's Hollywood debut.
You haven't seen it, it doesn't count.
Okay, I just want to mention that he went Hollywood this year.
All right.
And
I'll let it pass.
Okay, sorry, moving on. Okay, and my other one is Sword of Doom. It's a great samurai movie starring Tatsuya Nakadai, where he's a samurai who is a sociopath, and his sins catch up to him over time. And Toshiro Mifune is in it for maybe two scenes, but he gets, like, whenever it's mentioned, it always says it stars Toshiro Mifune, but he's in, like, two scenes.
Yeah.
And, like, he just plays a samurai teacher or whatever, and he sees this guy's style, and he's like, oh, interesting. And that's kind of the extent of his appearance in the movie. Like, oh, that's a weird stance to do, because his stance is, like, to lower the sword and hold it loosely so it can throw people off. Cinema Knife Fight this month is September, so the review is Baffled, this really fun failed TV pilot starring Leonard Nimoy, who's a Formula One driver who has psychic powers to see in the future. It's totally worth your time. And for October, the spookiest month of the year, I'm going to cover a TV movie called Vampire. Guess what it's about?
Submarine sandwich.
Yeah, a vampire who in San Francisco, and Jessica Walter is in it. And it's pretty good.
It's prequel to The Vampire in Brooklyn.
Sure, if only.
Hey! Nice.
Yeah, it's alright. Like, every Halloween review I do turns out to be either really something that's really bad, or something that's just alright.
Oh, you haven't run into the good one. This is, you're due.
Yeah, I was hoping this would change the, like, the last few were just really bad. Last year's was this shitty TV show called Werewolf. It's on Fox in the 80s. It's really terrible.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, good. Don't. Watch it. It's not worth your time.
All right.
But yeah, Vampire and...
Do I have to talk about my stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Your space pod.
So each week Please Don't Send Me Into Outer Space, me and my co-hosts, Aaron and Sarah, discuss a different science fiction or fantasy movie. Most recently, we rediscussed the movie Hardware, about the killer robot in a post-apocalyptic future. It's the post-apocalyptic future has already happened, so, you know, it's not a ripoff of Terminator. Okay? It's not. And let's see, what else have we been talking about recently? We did a movie from 1948 called Portrait of Jenny, which has a lot of classic Hollywood actors in it. It's got a... Well, now I'm drawing a blank on everybody's name, so I should probably just jump off of a cliff.
Jennifer Jones.
It's got Jennifer Jones. It's got Joseph Cotten. It's got Ethel Barrymore. It's got Cotton Eye Joe. No. And it's about a woman who seems to be unstuck in time, but she inspires a man to do his best, as most women should. All women should inspire men to do their best. Anyways, it was a good movie. Good discussion. More stuff coming soon. I'm not sure exactly what. Pretty soon we're going to be talking about Spirited Away.
What's this week?
This week we took a week off.
Oh.
So I'm going to be releasing a Joke-em-up episode where it's just all the extra stuff, but it's not a specific movie. Stop putting the pressure on me.
As on Grindbin episode 74, I will be on another podcast, but I don't know when. And that's a former guest is the host of this podcast.
What is it, Patrick Hamilton? Well, we're going to be on the Kill by Kill podcast pretty soon, too.
Yeah, I know. Talking about my favorite bad movie.
The Vineyard.
Yeah, it's the best.
That's not my favorite bad movie.
James Hong is the best.
My favorite bad movie is Rotor.
I haven't watched that yet.
It's so good.
James Hong is better.
No, I mean, The Vineyard is something to behold.
It really is.
It's like a softcore porn that never got in the place where it was supposed to.
If you ever want to see James Hong in a couple sex scenes, watch this movie.
Yeah. Quotation marks, sex scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Alfida Zane, hashtag Nocti forever, hashtag Joe Shishido forever.
Pineapple Joshua. Party, come on.
Yeah, Pineapple Party, other stuff, Thug Life.
Hashtag, why shouldn't a father kiss his daughter? No, I'm just kidding. See you later.
The show's email is highandlowpod@gmail.com. The show's Twitter is @highandlowpod. The show is available on the Google Play Store, Podiant, PODIANT, Podbean, as bean, not beam, and iTunes, and wherever you find your podcast. Thank you for listening.